Gentlemen, welcome to another Roundup episode. Since our last conversation, a lot has happened. One of the interesting things I feel like maybe briefly had a decent amount of people talking is this DOJ seizure of 127,000 Bitcoin. And I don't think we know quite what's going to be happening to them yet. But I wanted to kind of open up the conversation talking about the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve, which we've talked about some in the past. But if it were up to you guys, do you think that the DOJ should hold on to this Bitcoin as part of the Strategic Reserve or sell it?
Well, they should try to get it back to the people who actually own it or, you know, had it stolen from them, if at all possible, which I think is the way that their position is. And that is the order of things that they've laid out, which is that, you know, they work to restore ownership where, you know, from the victims of the scams that, you know, pulled it away from them, and whatever they're unable to return to the rightful owners, then that would be, I guess, commandeered or, you know, absorbed into the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve. So hopefully the vast majority of that does not end up in the reserve. It'd be really nice, you know, to be able to restore access to the Bitcoin that the victims of these scams, you know, were taken from them. So hopefully that's the case. We'll see. I mean, the U.S. government, we definitely don't want to have them be in a position where they're incentivized to steal people's Bitcoin through, you know, any kind of like law enforcement action, because that's always going to lead to some unintended consequences, let's say.
So real quick there, I actually didn't realize that the DOJ tended to really try to give the Bitcoin back to people. I feel like they've held some and they haven't made that as much of a priority. But that is something they have a track record of doing, which is once they've gotten Bitcoin that's been acquired via scams and things like that, they actually do tend to return it to the original owners.
That's what they state.
Okay.
I mean, you know, there's lawsuits and an order of operations to how those things play out, but that is what they say. How often does that actually happen? I don't know. I mean, these coins could be hung up in procedure for years, right? And so we'll have to see what they actually do with it.
So, John, I kind of gave the two options of keep it in the reserve or to sell it, and then Trey had the much more noble response of give it back to the people from whom it was stolen. What are your thoughts on, you know, what you would recommend the government do? What you think kind of moving forward would you prefer the U.S. government do when they get Bitcoin like this?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Trey and trying to return the Bitcoin to its rightful owners. I think trying to combat some of this, I don't know if this was some kind of pig scam or whatever it was overseas, it's still kind of unclear exactly what that really
means.
It's
not what it sounds like. That's what I've discovered.
Yeah. it's another rabbit hole. But I would say certainly not sell, right? I'd say if they are seizing Bitcoin, okay, we're holding it in the reserve. But at the same time, you don't want it to turn into a stolen Bitcoin reserve instead of a strategic Bitcoin reserve, right? We should, if the U.S. is going to buy Bitcoin, it should be buying it with assets that it has. And not, as Trey said, incentivized to take more people's Bitcoin. I think it's still unclear how much Bitcoin is even in the U.S. holds right now in the different agencies. That's still very much a question mark that I think Bessent has given some ballpark estimates, you know, on interviews this year around where, like, the value of how much Bitcoin the U.S. holds. You can kind of back into it. But it's even who holds the keys and where is the Bitcoin being held and how is it accessed? I think those are all really important questions. So maybe, okay, you say you're cracking down here on a scam and putting it into wallet US controls. Well, if we can give it back to whoever was scammed, great. But if not, yeah, this I think is certainly a way they seed it. Not ideal, but ultimately, maybe they monetize the gold, they increase the gold price, right? There's a lot of these budget neutral ways of buying Bitcoin are still on the docket. You know, we're approaching the end of the year here, but that was the charge at the beginning of the year with the executive order. So I think maybe soon into next year, into 26, we'll see more of that coming into fruition. So
Yeah, well, they've been talking about these budget neutral ways of acquiring Bitcoin for quite a while now, and I haven't seen any of those actually play out.
No.
And I don't really actually think that it's going to happen at this point. I mean, again, like we're coming up into 2026 and the elections are right around the corner, and you're kidding yourself if you don't think that's going to be on the minds of the people in office, you know, at least on the congressional side for like the Bitcoin Act. To make the strategic reserve more of a law of the land as opposed to the result of an executive order. And, you know, if there was momentum behind the administration's ability to turn some, you know, turn these budget neutral avenues into actual Bitcoin for the reserve, they probably would have done it already, I would think. I mean, there's all kinds of low-hanging fruit, you know? So, like, yeah, when is a better time for them to do it than when they already had the momentum and they haven't done it? So, it feels like just talk right now.
Definitely still feels like talk, but knowing how slow the government operates, and right now with the government being shut down, they're definitely not getting anything done. So it's just,
but again, just this is executive order type stuff, right? Like this is all stuff that they can just unilaterally do. I think it certainly doesn't require Congress being in session for them to find these budget neutral ways. So I hear what you're saying. And at the same time, when there are things that the Trump administration wants to get done, they just kind of do it and ask for forgiveness later, right? And so why they haven't done this, I don't know. But it certainly is not a priority from, you know, the way that they normally do business.
Well, one thing's for sure, while the government has at least seemingly been inactive on the Bitcoin buying front, we have great prices for buying Bitcoin for those who aren't too concerned by recent price action. So that has not slowed down institutions. We still see these treasury companies buying Bitcoin. And people are asking, why is the Bitcoin price not increasing? And Jordy Visser from his Visser Lab Substack wrote a great article talking about how Bitcoin was having its IPO moment. And essentially, his thesis is that the early adopters now have, they see that there's enough liquidity in the market for them to sell their Bitcoin without the Bitcoin price just crashing. And he makes a case that back in July or June, whenever it was, when those 80,000 Bitcoin or whatever the precise amount was sold, you know, dumped onto the market in very short order. That was kind of the beginning of this IPO moment where people with a ton of Bitcoin are starting to get rid of it. And he makes the case that for any IPO, the early investors are not necessarily the long-term investors. So it's a really interesting concept. I would recommend people go read that article if they haven't yet. But I wanted to kind of bring it up to you guys. Does this line up with how you interpret what's happening in the market right now?
I think it makes sense based on what we know at this point in time, which is that there are a lot of very old coins that are moving and apparently contributing to the supply overhang that we've seen for the price. And so framing it in the sense of an IPO moment, I think that resonates. You're seeing, you know, with an IPO, you're right that there's like these early investors, they get in when it's super risky and there's very little chance that something is going to play out in a favorable way. And then, you know, when you get to that IPO time, there is a whole bunch of liquidity. And there's this liquidity event that allows for those early insiders to be able to, you know, dump their positions, for lack of a better way of putting it, and turn that investment into cash. I feel like Bitcoin is a little bit different in terms of like what it is, though. You know, it's not, it's not a stock, it's not a company. And these early Bitcoin investors, you know, if you were mining Bitcoin that early, if you were buying it that early, there tends to be, at least in the people that I've talked to of that ilk, you know, kind of a philosophical alignment toward the problems that Bitcoin, you know, purports to solve. And I find it hard to believe that people, you know, hodl for that long and then all of a sudden their philosophical leanings just up and change. Does that mean that they are not tempted to take some profits, so to speak, or improve their lifestyle by selling some Bitcoin? No, and good for them. They should be able to do that. But I don't know that the comparison is exactly on point to call it an IPO moment. But I think where that started was the ability for the ETFs to come online and start to bring a whole lot more capital. And then you're also seeing, you know, more capital coming in from the Bitcoin treasury companies, primarily Sailor and Strategy, or seems to be the only ones that are actually actively buying with any kind of size at this point. But it does provide some extra liquidity for people to get rid of Bitcoin that they want to get rid of without moving the price lower, as you're saying. And the price, like, as annoying of a grind as this has been, you know, just speaking for my own sentiments, the price has been pretty damn resilient above 100,000 despite all of this new coin coming on.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think since the ETFs coming online at the beginning of 2024, you just have this persistent demand, way more sources of capital that have access to IBIT and FBTC and these products, where IBIT's over, 800,000 Bitcoin now overall, approaching 1.5 million coins in these structures, right? You have Grayscale still that converted and all the other ETFs. So yeah, certainly being above 100K for this long, I think is really cementing Bitcoin's status. And while Bitcoin's always been public, right, and it's a public ledger and everyone had access to it, potentially not all businesses or institutions had access to it through their charters and through being able to actually hold your own keys. As an individual, you've had this opportunity to front run these institutions. And then now as an individual, you have a chance to basically dump to them. But those are the next wave of buyers that they have a lot of value in getting Bitcoin at this price, over 100K. And yeah, ranging from 105 to 125 is not a big, you know, a huge percent. While that's big in dollar terms, it's percentage-wise even low for the volatility that we've seen in Bitcoin and in previous cycles. So, yeah, I think it's an interesting framing, but Bitcoin is different from any of these other instruments that humans have engineered, such as stocks. Bitcoin is a different animal. So, yeah, I think it definitely remains to be seen, but super bullish that the price has stayed above these levels with these big coins. James Check, Check on Chain, someone I love to follow. He does amazing writing in the space, and he's echoed that sentiment that Jordy wrote about as well. Just, hey, this is a higher seller quantity of coins coming out of the market than we've seen, and that's keeping the price, this kind of chop solidation too, and relatively sideways price action, but that's it changing hands and waiting for the next, you know, move upwards. So the longer we can stay in this range and hold off on the selling and opportunity to stack more sats at these levels is great for the plebs out there.
It also does feel like there's been a changing of the guard, so to speak, in just the voices that are around Bitcoin and talking about it and are the thought leaders in the space. You know, it's like there are a lot of the old voices that I, you know, found very helpful early on in my journey are really quiet now, if they're around at all. And there's a whole new cohort of people who are out talking about Bitcoin and talking about the treasury companies and what's going on in the market and all this, right? Jordy Visser is one of those newer voices who's talking about Bitcoin. There's all kinds of these other people from the macro world, from the technology world, from the financial world, who are talking about Bitcoin, who were not at all talking about Bitcoin, you know, 6-8 years ago or whatever. So, I think this is just a natural evolution of change in ownership. And ultimately, that's a good thing. Like, we kind of want some disbursement of those early coins into a broader group of holders. You know, it allows for the Bitcoin economy to grow in terms of network effect, right? Because you have more. They may be smaller economic nodes, so to speak, but there are more of them and more people have an economic incentive to want Bitcoin to grow as opposed to it being a smaller cohort of people.
If you were hit by a bus right now, could your family access your Bitcoin? When's the right time to stop hodling and use Bitcoin to impact your family's lives, not just yours? What if Bitcoin doesn't reach the value you expect, or it takes longer to reach that value? Do you have a plan? Do you have the proper trust structure to avoid probate, maintain your privacy, and minimize taxes? Do you want to avoid taxes to stack more sats or leverage your stack without selling? Should you add Bitcoin to your business's balance sheet? Are you truly confident in your self-custody setup? If any of those questions made you stop and think, you probably realize that simply buying and holding Bitcoin is not a complete financial plan. That's where Strong Wealth comes in. Orange-pilled advisors blending traditional financial planning with deep Bitcoin expertise, giving you the best of both worlds, so you can sleep peacefully knowing you're making the right moves for your family no matter what happens. Schedule a free call at strongwealth.net. That's strongwealth.net. Strong Wealth, wealth management for Bitcoiners by Bitcoiners.
I appreciate the critiques that you guys have for this particular IPO idea. One of the things that is sort of interesting, it foreshadows some of the next things we'll be talking about in today's conversation. But it's interesting that, if this is correct, it's interesting that OGs are selling now, because I feel like there's more ways than ever to use your Bitcoin, buy things with Bitcoin. Do you think that they might still be selling? And at the end of the day, you know, how would we know? But do you think they might still be selling because some of those railways to spend Bitcoin in the real world are not yet easy enough? Or is there something else? Like, it seems like if OGs wanted to live off of Bitcoin, they could pretty easily do that today based on all the tools that are currently out there.
I think some, it seemed like maybe seeding their Bitcoin treasury company with Bitcoin. So maybe if it changes hands and that's like kind of a sale, or it enters into a different structure, maybe that's a way to kind of not live off it, but leverage it in a way. I think that could certainly be at place for some of the early coins. But ultimately, yeah, Bitcoin is valuable because it's storing your value now and you can spend it into the future. And we're seeing more and more merchants accepting Bitcoin, more products where you can use Bitcoin as collateral. I mean, JP Morgan, right, saying, yeah, you can use Bitcoin as collateral is a huge signpost of things to come. I think in seeing, as you mentioned, ways that maybe you can draw a fiat line of credit off your Bitcoin, or you can get a Bitcoin back loan with Unchained, you know, for your business on based on Bitcoin as collateral. So I think there could be a lot of scenarios, but it's hard to say maybe what in the mind of miners, maybe they just like, we're well over 100K. They care about Bitcoin. And if they tried to sell that much 5 years ago, it could have sent us into a bear market for a while. And now it's not the case. And people want to improve one aspect of their life or not and decide to sell some Bitcoin. But I think, as you said, Trey, I think it's a powerful notion that actually naturally Bitcoin has this decentralizing effect. We have an increased distribution of coins over time versus the fiat monetary system, where you have the Cantillon effect and where you have people closest to the money printer getting an increase of their monetary stack whenever there's more money printing. It's a different effect in Bitcoin. So while there still are some bigger holders of Bitcoin, you know, I don't think we're going to see Satoshi's million coins move, right? And there's still there's bigger exchanges and fiat on and off ramps, but ultimately it's getting more sats into more people's hands through these other investment vehicles, where it's a good effect of Bitcoin over time, right? Instead of just the early people holding and getting the only ones benefiting from an increase in purchasing power.
I mean, if you're going to buy a jet, or you're going to buy a mansion in Malibu, or, you know, an island somewhere, there's probably a very small network of people who are able to sell you those things. And an even smaller chunk of those are going to actually accept Bitcoin as payment for them. So, you know, like, the dollar's network effect is head and shoulders above Bitcoins at this point. Sure, you can go buy a burger at Steak and Shake whenever you want, and that's awesome. But it's going to be hard to spend your $8 billion worth of Bitcoin that you're sitting on at Steak and Shake alone.
It's a lot of burgers.
So I think one of the other topics we're going to talk about is, you know, with Square and them implementing payments, which is coming up here in the next week. So hopefully that helps. But, you know, we still got a long way to go before people are going to be spending their Bitcoin in that kind of size directly into the economy in any meaningful way.
Sure. Yeah. And what you just brought up is exactly what we're talking about next, which is Square essentially making it possible for anyone with a Square terminal to begin accepting Bitcoin over the Lightning Network as payment. In addition to that, there's an auto convert feature where you can convert a portion of sales into Bitcoin. And overall, this is a really cool way, especially if you go to a store, you have Bitcoin, you're interested in spending it. Going to someone who has a Square terminal and asking them if they accept Bitcoin. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about this, if you've had any of those conversations with any shop owners in your area. Personally, I have not, but the fact that this is about to be something that can really blow up mainstream is pretty exciting to me.
Where do things stand on how they're rolling it out? Because I think I remember originally they were going to make it a default option that was available to all of the Square terminals, such that the proprietor or the business owner would not have to actually turn on the payments function. It would just be on by default and they'd have to turn it off. But also by default, it would convert 100% from Bitcoin to dollars unless they opted in to keeping some portion of it in BTC. Is that still the plan for it? Because if not, it's very much going to limit the amount of people who turn this feature on if they have to opt into the Bitcoin payments.
Yeah. John, I know you do a lot with small business owners. I don't know if you're more well-versed than I am on this. I could provide some of my assumptions, but that would be all that they are.
Yeah. As far as I know, Trey, I think that is how they were planning on rolling it out. I know they were having additional bonuses for like the first 20,000 businesses that turned on the auto convert feature as well from fiat into Bitcoin. But I'm excited to dig in. I'm hosting a coffee meetup outside Chicago where I'm living now in Cafe de Oro. And he's actually someone, it's a family owned business. They have a coffee shop, gas station, as well as car wash. And I went there, met up with a Bitcoiner actually last summer and was just chatting with him and talking about accepting Bitcoin. He was open to it, but the tools, again, getting set up with something else than Square was a bit too much of a hurdle for him. So I'm excited to dig in. I think next week I'll meet with him and see what those options are for the default business owner that wants to just turn it on. If anyone's in the Chicago area, the 21st, we'll be meeting out in the burbs. And then actually the 11th, we'll do another coffee meetup. Another coffee shop. Not sure if they accept or if they're on Square yet. If not, we'll switch to somewhere else. But we picked a different place in the city called Werewolf. But I'm really excited about this. Turning on Bitcoin payments for 4 million merchants is a massive win. We're seeing the great uptake that Steak and Shake has had and other businesses that have turned on Bitcoin payments. And someone who loves farmers markets over here paying so often when the merchants have Square, I think this is a game changer, especially come next summer. So if it is default and even, merchants might not even know, or the person at the front desk, hey, you actually do accept, ask that question, are you accepting Bitcoin? If it shows up as a default and 100% into fiat, that gives us as consumers the option, but ultimately try to find out who's in a position of either manager or owner of the business that you can talk to about keeping some of that in Bitcoin or converting some fiat into Bitcoin, getting some of the local community to go to that business and ultimately drive more sales is the ultimate goal, right, for the business owner. So if Bitcoin can be a tool to do that, and also lowering transaction fees, that's 3% instead of 3%. I think Square is not charging at all for the Bitcoin conversions in the first year plus. And then after that, I think it'll be around 1%. So still saving a couple percent can go a long way for a lower margin or, front end retail business. So I'm really excited to see this rolling out in the next couple weeks.
Today's episode of Business Bitcoinization is proudly brought to you by Velus Commerce, where the future of business technology meets Bitcoin. As we journey through the era of Bitcoin and its transformational impact on businesses, there's one name that stands out: Velus Commerce. Whether you're looking to build a cutting-edge website, a seamless mobile app, or custom software, Velus is your go-to team. They've been diving deep into the world of Bitcoin since 2014, making them one of the most experienced groups for integrating Bitcoin and Lightning payments into a variety of digital platforms. But here's what truly sets them apart. Velus Commerce doesn't just build. They bring a wealth of knowledge to ensure your project's success from day one. Their team understands the nuances of Bitcoin, ensuring that your business stays ahead of the curve. And for all business Bitcoinization listeners out there, Velus Commerce is offering a free consultation to kickstart your project the right way. So if you're ready to future-proof your business in the coming age of hyper-Bitcoinization, head over to veluscommerce.com or reach out on Twitter at Velus Commerce. Let's make sure your business thrives in the Bitcoin era.
Yeah, I just did a quick search on Gemini for whatever the default features are going to be, and it seems to think that it will not be default to on for the Bitcoin acceptance. So
okay.
I just think, like, if that default is not there, very few people are going to turn it on, right? Like, you've got to already be a Bitcoiner in order to want to turn that on. There's obviously very few people of that. So we'll see. I mean,
yeah.
You know, that makes me a lot less bullish on it.
I'll talk to the business. Yeah, I can report back on the next show and let you guys know, what it looks like from the business owner perspective.
Yeah. My thought would be that if they have enough customers who are asking, then they'll at least consider it. Then that's where I feel like, I don't know how popular these are anymore. When I got into Bitcoin back in 2021, Bitcoin meetups were all the rage. I don't know if that's still the case. I know there are still plenty of them out there. I don't know how normal it is for people who are interested in Bitcoin to go to a Bitcoin meetup. But if you are involved in a Bitcoin meetup or want to be, first of all, you know, check it out and see if there's one around you, because there probably is if you're in a populated enough area. But if you're part of a Bitcoin meetup and you go to a restaurant, you say, hey, we would like to meet here on a consistent basis and we'd love to pay in Bitcoin when we come. Then that at least starts that conversation in the business owner's mind. It's a great place to at least, you know, try it out. And if you find someone who's willing to accept Bitcoin, go to their restaurant, go to their whatever it is, and buy from them. And as that's happening, more people will at least consider it. So yeah, I think that if it's not default, then it won't be top of mind. But as a Bitcoiner who's interested in paying in Bitcoin, you can help to make it top of mind, or at least closer to the top of the mind of the business owner.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm not going into random businesses and just saying, hey, will you accept my Bitcoin? I don't know. It's just not how I roll. What I would like to do is notice that there is a Square terminal there that they're using. And when I go to pay, I just choose the Bitcoin option because it's the default. You know, it's like, then I'm going to do it, but I'm not going to go through this like awkward conversation. Hey, I'm a Bitcoiner. I want to spend Bitcoin. Can you turn this on? Oh, I don't know how to do it. Okay, let me show you. It's like, sorry, but these people, they're not interested. If they were interested, we'd be a lot further along. So
for sure.
Anyway.
For sure. There's still a few crazies out there.
There are.
Yeah, Orange Pill Apps got some good events and things you can find in your local area too.
For sure. So our final topic of conversation today is going to be Steak and Shake. They've recently announced that they're going to begin their own strategic Bitcoin reserve, and any burgers or other products that are purchased in Bitcoin, that Bitcoin will remain as Bitcoin on their balance sheet, which I think is pretty cool. Trey, it sounded like you had some questions about what this might mean for how many Bitcoin sales are actually happening. To me, this is pretty cool. It may be pandering, but I think that over the long term, whether or not Steak and Shake is pandering, they're going to benefit from this move.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a good thing that they're doing it. I think it probably sends a signal to me that the volume of Bitcoin payments that they're actually receiving is very small. And so it's not consequential for them to have to sell a whole bunch of this to cover their cost of goods sold, right? And so they're like, okay, well, we might as well just use this as a PR win and stack the Bitcoin, and then it will grow over time and become something that is a nice little, you know, side investment. But I don't know. I mean, the way that they talk about it, the way that they are on social media is very much bullish on it, as if it's been like a very meaningful impact to the business. And I've always been kind of surprised to hear that that's the case, because I'm just kind of naturally bearish on the fact that people even own Bitcoin and are in a position to spend it. Mm. It's like, obviously it's a superior form of like using cash or a debit card or whatever, but nobody owns any. And if they do own any, it's sitting on Coinbase somewhere. They don't have it like at the ready on their phone to be able to spend via a Lightning transaction. They just, nobody owns Bitcoin in that way. So it would be very surprising to me to hear that they had some very significant portion of their sales that is coming from Bitcoin payments. But I could be wrong. I'm would love to be wrong about this.
Yeah, I think everything they're doing is a signpost and where business will be heading. I think to your point, Trey, not a lot of people have Bitcoin yet. And if you do, you should probably HODL it. But as Bitcoin continues to grow in value that it's storing and there are more people holding it, we're going to naturally want to spend it. And I think showing what's possible today in 2025 when the Lightning Network works great. And there are some really great apps and tools out there to hold a Lightning balance, right? Whether you're a Strike or you're using Nostr and you're in Primal or however you want to interact with the Lightning Network and hold some sats there. Maybe you're earning some in as rewards. Well, what can I go spend it on? You know, having, I think they said 10% boost in their business. And I don't know if you can attribute all that to Bitcoiners going to their business, but they're doing something right compared to other fast food chains. I think that's pretty clear from the public statements that are out there. So I do think there's definitely some momentum, and the fact that they'll be donating some of those sats to OpenSats as well, nonprofit focused on open source Bitcoin and Nostr development is great. So, you know, kudos to that. All those announcements where they had like one tweet where it's like, oh, we can start a shitcoin. It's like, no, we probably shouldn't. that was like, what part of the shtick was that? But they came back on track, and for a business of that scale to turn it on and just make it an option, as you said, Trey, you know, that's the main thing. We shouldn't have to always have these conversations. It should be natural that a merchant wants to just have it, or that the services out there enable those features, right? Zaprite's another great example of that, where you can have fiat and Bitcoin and Lightning next to each other as options and let the user decide. You don't necessarily, and once you're into Bitcoin, you're like, I don't need another wallet to hold more sats. I want to, you know, kind of have a consolidated flow here. So those connection points, I think, are going to continue to improve, you know, in the back half of the decade here as we see Bitcoin being used more and more as a medium of exchange, but certainly a fun spot to go and host a meetup. I still have to go and find the nearest one to me in Illinois. I haven't been yet, but I see they got the B on the buns. They got some promo with Fold as well, some big extra awards, you know, all those kinds of things. It's great. Great to see the collaboration and just encouraging more folks to learn about Bitcoin.
I absolutely love that they've continued to lean into the Bitcoin thing and actually continue to promote it. I mean, it's been 6-8 months since they actually launched all of this, and they're still doing it. They're still doing a Bitcoin day and whatever they're doing, the Bitcoin burger and stuff. So it's awesome. Like, don't get me wrong. It's just not enough to like actually be at a inflection point for Bitcoin adoption. And again, like Square coming out, that would be amazing if it was the default, but apparently it's not. So we'll see on November 10th when they launch it.
Well, as we get toward wrapping up, Trey, I wanted to give you a second to talk about anything you've been discussing as far as Bitcoin and FIRE goes on your Substack. Have there been any conversations you've been continuing on that you want the readers or today's listeners to be aware of?
Well, the most recent post that is out there is just about how the universe tends to align itself with your intentions if you take some, steps every single day toward the outcome that you want to happen. There's kind of like this thought in quantum mechanics that there's, you know, basically an infinite number of possibilities that lay in front of you in terms of the timeline, and they all come with varying amounts of probability or what will actually take place. And by taking action, you bend the probabilities in the direction of the action that you're taking, which I think is a really important and fun insight to have, because every single day when you make a decision to live intentionally, spend intentionally, save a little bit more, save those extra sats, and have this financial independence lens on your day-to-day activities, you're improving the probability or improving the chances that you actually reach that goal that you've set for yourself. So there's no like, you know, light switch type of luck that's needed here. You just need to take those steps day by day and bend the probabilities in your favor with every decision that you make. So that is last week's. And then this week, I'm talking about the K-shaped economy. I just started working on that this morning. So it should be an interesting view in kind of just the way the fiat world is shaped and how we should think about that in light of a pursuit of financial independence and using Bitcoin as a tool for that.
That's awesome. Just one comment on the first article, Trey. Some of us in the spiritual world will call that manifestation. I love that you're talking about that. And from a quantum perspective and from more on the spiritual side, and as a Bitcoin yogi, there's certainly a lot of literature and interesting readings on manifestation, particularly the law of attraction. But ultimately, the message of law of attraction is, yeah, you're thinking it, but then taking aligned action to bring about the world that you want to create for yourself, right? And I think that's along those lines of saving and moving towards your goals, taking those aligned actions, and then ultimately attracting that energy towards yourself, it's powerful for sure. So if you start practicing it, and I think from the fire and Bitcoin perspective, for me, is a huge unlock of just trying to see understanding Bitcoin and this concept of energy and being attracted and ultimately to abundance, right? And not being in the scarcity mindset, but being more of an abundance mindset, and knowing that we can create the world we want to see. And not be limited by where a lot of people are today of being stuck in the fiat mindset of inflation, hamster wheel, and, you know, kind of not opting out and seeing that there's another way. So there's definitely a strong connection there. So look forward to reading that.
Yeah. And I think it's all true on an individual basis. But, you know, now that I think about it, just the Bitcoin movement itself is very much an example of this in action. It's like a small number of people who have a certain vision for the world and are literally memeing a new money into existence that is now globally accepted as a normal thing. Are we where we want it to be yet? No. Are the probabilities aligned with our mission much more than they were before? Like, what are the chances that Bitcoin is successful in the way that we want it to be now versus what it was 5-10 years ago? Well, it's much more probabilistic that that's going to happen than it ever has been. And that's just from the concerted effort of all of the Bitcoiners who believe that we can make the world a better place by helping people to understand these concepts and adopt something like Bitcoin. So it's just kind of a fun thought experiment, but it really does ring true with the way that I have come to know, like, the type of impact that you can have on your own life and on the world around you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as Satoshi said, it might make sense to get some in case it catches on. It can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. So absolutely, that's, was, I think, on Satoshi's mind very early as well.
So Trey, if you would share with people where they can go to read more from your Substack and keep up with you on socials, then John, if you would give people any updates about your mini projects and let people know where they can keep up with you as well.
Yeah, the newsletter is at firebtc.substack.com. Go check it out. You can see the whole archive there, and you know, let me know what you think. And you can see me at TS_HODL. On X as well. I'm doing a lot of posting on there, trying to pump that up.
Yeah, and you can find me on X or Noster at the Bitcoin Yogi. And to learn more, you can head to satoshihealth.com or soundhsa.com. Learn more about what I'm doing at the intersection of Bitcoin and healthcare. I'm still pushing to get the HSA out the door and excited to keep building. We're doing a trial now on Move to Earn. So we're working with an employer, a doctor actually, for his 50 employees, and doing Move to Earn challenges every week. So we onboarded a bunch of folks to Noster, Bitcoin, and Lightning all at the same time to learn 10,000 sats if they do 50,000 steps for the week. So we're excited to see how that adoption takes place, and very much from someone who most of the employees have no familiarity with or very little with Bitcoin yet. So kind of taking them through some of the Bitcoin 101 and putting it into action and connecting it to here, you know, a healthy action of steps. We're excited to see that continue to play out over the next couple months and hopefully roll it out to more companies that want to integrate it.
Great. Well, guys, really appreciate your time today, and we'll talk again in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Fun as always.
Take care.
Well, friends, it's a wrap. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Bitcoin Playbook. If you want to reach out to either me, Trey, or John, you can find those links down in the show notes. And be sure to check out Sound HSA and the Fire BTC Substack. As always, keep building, keep growing. Until next time, keep living and leading well.